All right, it just now hit 12 Eastern, 5 p.m. UTC. this is Kyle or Holy Macaroni or Epoch Sec.
Just now hit 12 Eastern, 5.
One second, I'm hearing myself. Okay. Let's see if that's better. I'm going to give that a minute, see if I hear myself. Probably need to mute my computer. I believe that was it. Okay, so this is my cybersecurity community support weekly Twitter space. I'm doing probably anywhere from 3 to 5 per week. It depends if anybody reaches out to me for individual conversations. It did just hit about noon, so I'll give it a few minutes to see if people pop in. Otherwise, I'll get to moving forward. I don't know if this is a good time to have these spaces. I'm still trying to feel that thing out. So, yeah, but the plan will be to Lathesin from Drip Drops had a post the other day with a bunch of good information. So I'm gonna dig into that some and give a couple other tips and see if anybody joins and has any questions. But I'm going to go back on mute until about 5 after. So in about 3 minutes, if you're listening to this recording, and we'll get started. Okay, it is about 5 minutes after. And for those people listening to the recording, I owe you to come back so you're not wondering when I'm speaking. Nobody's joined yet, but noon Eastern, 5 UTC on Thursday may not be a good time. I'll try to figure out better times. I'm definitely doing one this evening as well at 6 Eastern, 11 UTC. I think that would be a lot better time for a lot of people. I can't do that every time, every day of the week because, you know, I have to help the wife with things at night, but I'll try to do two of those at night per week and then two probably early morning or something. That seemed like a decent time the first time I did it as well. But anyway, just to give, I've probably talked about my project a few dozen times now in depth. You can find, I'll go ahead and find my post if I can. I will go find last post at least here. Hang tight while I try to do that. Okay, maybe not. Hang tight for with me. I'm just trying to find this post to share it. Okay, so I have pinned my pinned tweet on Holy Macaroni that will dig into my project for you. I'll give a quick little overview of that momentarily. Hang tight, I'm almost there. I'm going to share Lethesin's post from Drip Drops here as well. Post that. Okay. See. Okay, they're both there. Okay, great. So, yeah, a quick summary of my project is a Catalyst Fund 9 approved project for community cybersecurity community support. The premise is now I can offer you guys quote unquote free services, right? Yeah, it was funded by Catalyst, but now you can join my spaces every week, or you can go to my website at epochsec.io. You can go to the contact page. I have my calendar right there. You just click a day, pick a time, hit the submit or something button, and then it will automatically schedule that and send a meeting invite with a Google Meet link to both of us, and then we can meet up and we could talk about whatever you'd like. If you're an individual and just have some questions that you want some specific answers to, or you need my help looking at something, or if you're a team looking for some guidance and you don't really have a cybersecurity expert, I can provide some direction and recommendations and all that good stuff. So you're welcome to do that, or just join my Twitter spaces. We'll also from time to time post an article or something like that. Yesterday I posted an article. Someone had asked me for a cheat sheet on, you know, general security things to do for Linux. I wrote that up and, you know, formatted it and made it look good and all that, and I posted that on my website as well. You can find that on the you can find all of my Twitter spaces and anything I post on there, articles, whatever, on the information feed page. My website is extremely basic, so it is not hard to navigate. There's also a search feature on the information feed page. So as this project grows and I'm putting a lot more things, you can search a keyword, and every time I do something, I'll try to put keywords in there, and you can search a keyword and find where I probably talked about that thing. Yeah, so that's my project. Go to my Holy Macaroni Twitter page and look at my pinned thread to get all the details. And one moment here before I get started. Okay, so I see more people talking about my 6 p.m., 11 p.m. UTC one, so maybe this will just be me talking to you. I do have my Holy Macaroni account on here, just so you can see. I always do that, just so you know, EpochSec and Holy Macaroni are the same. Okay, so let's talk about Lethesin's post. He's a member of Drip Drops, and he's just a super smart guy. What he did was put a list of five or six things that he follows and does to better protect himself. And the whole idea was really just, to bring awareness to this in light of all the recent events, with Voyager, Celsius, and especially FTX that's fresh in everybody's minds, and that sort of stuff, right? So, the what my project is really holistically about just protecting people in all sorts of ways, right? Because the reality is we're still in a Web 2 world with a little bit of Web 3 stuff, right? So all the traditional attacks are still there. So some of this will be crypto related and some more just general protecting yourself related. But what he did, again, getting back on track here, he listed out five or six things. And what I want to point out there is he didn't list one thing. He listed a handful of things. Now, in my profession, we call that mindset layered security, right? The very first thing that I want to make a strong point on is never rely on one thing. If you think you have a very secure password, that's not enough. If you have two-factor authentication enabled, that is not enough. If you have a hardware wallet, that is not enough, right? Do multiple things to build your security, right? Layered security. No one thing is foolproof. And you'll see that as an example, in one of the things I'll talk about from Lutheson's post. So let's get started. The first thing he goes over is taking your funds off of exchanges. This is a crypto-related one, obviously. But yeah, I mean, it could be applied to the regular world as well, around your banks and stuff like that. But that's a whole nother conversation. Hey, Ralph, thanks for joining me. And I'm just there's not a lot of people. This is Holy Macaroni. There's not a lot of people here right now, but I'm still building up my project, getting it out there. Everybody's getting ready for the summit. It's a noon Eastern on a Thursday, so I think I'll have a lot more people later on. But Ralph, if you want to jump up, just request speaker. If you want to ask anything or say anything, I'm glad to have a conversation with you. And if other people drop in the next 45 minutes, I'll do that with them as well. So I won't invite you up. I won't put you on the spot. But if you want to be invited up, just let me know. But again, the first thing Lothesis is talking about is those exchanges. This is a very obvious one, in maybe it's not really obvious, but I would say right now in this time period, and you've heard a lot of people talk about it, the best strategy right now really is to only use exchanges for exactly what they're meant to do. Exchanging something, right? Exchanging fiat into a cryptocurrency, or cryptocurrency back into fiat, or ch exchanging from one cryptocurrency to another. That's what I'll do. I will, if I want to move currency A to currency B, I will, at that time, once I have established exactly what I'm going to do, and I know my exact steps I'm going to do, so I'm on there as little as possible, I'll transfer my currency to whatever exchange, Kraken, Coinbase, whatever I prefer. I'm not going to get in my recommendations on exchanges because I feel like people get bit in the rear end doing that. But just get on there, do your thing, and get out. And then whatever currency you have, I mean, this is a Cardano community, so we're talking about ADA. Bring that back into your Eternal wallet or your Daedalus wallet or NAMI or whatever you're using. Transfer to the exchange, do your business, and get out. I think someone had an analogy the other day about bathrooms, right? You go in there, do your thing, and get back out. You don't just hang out in there and spend your time, right? Or something like that. But anyway, that is, yeah, Ralph, I see you requested. I'll bring you up, man. Let me know. I hope that worked. I did hit approve. Yeah, well, see if that worked or not. I'll just hit invite to speak and see if that works. But that's enough for the exchanges right now. I think that's pretty straightforward. Just use them to get out. Ralph, you can message me on Twitter if you're having a problem getting up as a speaker. But I did invite you up as well. But anyway, I'll continue. So the next thing he talks about is investing in a hardware wallet, right? So having your own wallets through Eternal or Nami, Daedalus, whatever is cool. But for one, that is still software running on your system. And not only that, but that is software created by somebody else. And all software has a potential of being vulnerable. There's nothing in the world that is not vulnerable to some degree. Let's see here. I think that worked that time, Ralph. I think I heard you pop up here.
I think I am good now. I am good now.
Yeah, okay.
First
Yep, I can
wow.
hear you well. Yeah. Yeah. Wasn't I? I think I was just talking to you on Discord, right? Is that
Yeah,
where?
that was me.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, sorry. I at least I remembered correctly, right? I was worried if I wouldn't because I've been trying my best at marketing my project and I'm not a marketer, so I've been very busy doing
Yeah, as no, nor am I, and
it.
I'm still. Even though I had a Twitter one since like 2014, I have never really actively used it until the past few years, just to keep up with crypto projects, and then I tried to keep it consistent between Discord and Twitter, and trying to put faces to names in this community as I've just been around since 2017 as an investor. But I've learned a lot. I've lost things along the way, been hacked along the way, been deceived through Discord along the way. So, like, it's been a rite of passage, which is why I wanted to learn more about how to, get that security aspect and be able to continue to spread that message. But yeah, like you said, I
Sure.
love the talking about it's like a bathroom, right? You get in and you get out. And most people think that, oh, I can use an exchange because it's FDIC insured. Talking about more specifically to the US. But then they realize, oh, that's only for USD and that's not even covering Tether or any digitized, stable coins. So it's like people think that they have this sometimes this false sense of security. Like, oh, as long as it's on this insured place, which you are insured, then it's safe. But even that's not all the way true. So I put money in. I recommend if people are going to dive in, you got to be aware of that 6 to 7 day business day period. Always be conservative. Get your money in, set your limit orders. But as soon as they hit, and hopefully you've had your money in a little bit fast, but you're not then stuck in that 6 day limbo period where you need your assets off of the exchange. And then you can't get them. You have to wait, right? I had an issue trying to get mints early on with Cardano and Algorand and other projects because I couldn't get my assets off of Coinbase quick enough. So, yeah, good points all being made then.
Yeah, that's a great point, Ralph. Yeah, that I didn't even mention. You're right. The whole FDIC insured thing, where that's not, you're right. That's not foolproof, right? I'm not even sure. I'm not an FDIC expert, but I imagine that probably only applies to U.S. citizens. And then on the limitations that you mentioned around USD and the situation with stablecoins and other stuff, right? So, even if they, I think. Coinbase and Kraken, for example, they're US-based companies, and I'm pretty sure they're FDIC insured, but I wouldn't rely on that, right? Because for one, even if it does work, it's going to be, I imagine it'd be years before you actually got anything out of that, and you don't know what you'll even get out of it, right? That I would not trust FDIC insured. I would not see that and say, okay, I feel safe. Not at all. Yeah.
Correct. Yep. It's just that that's the only time I use it and feel any like safe is because say I have limit orders set and I have my US dollar, but that's still being held as USD. It's not an actual USDC. It's actually a trade pair between USD and those assets. So that is the only type of comfortability. Like you said, it's you don't even want to like act like that's a foolproof, but it is a great start. To just know that you can comfortably set up limit orders, at least based in the US, that you don't have to worry about, oh, if things were to just freeze from any of these other exchanges, you could at least recover that USD. No, for that amount, depending on, again, where you're at, where it's regulated. I'm specifically talking to my situation, so I don't want to cancel out other regulatory, you know, bodies out there. But it's just something that I've learned over the years. And through the whole Celsius, it really caused me, that was the first thing that caused me to really dive in, because I talked to the Celsius people directly. I was at the Bitcoin conference when I was like, oh, I want to talk to Celsius. And it was, I asked enough questions to get spooked on, you know, every person that worked there had been there for less than 6 weeks. And I'm talking to like 14 people, and there's so many red flags, and I got so many different stories that everyone's story seemed to be a little bit different about where the company was going and things like that. And that first was like, back to my fundamentals from 2017, not your keys, not your crypto. But I know that said a lot on these.
Indeed.
Pages, I just want to reiterate.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing about security, right? Like reiterating these things, just beating the dead horse, right? It sounds mundane and dry and exhausting, but just repeating these things over and over and over, you know, just us talking right here might save one person from being compromised, right? And that's important to realize, you know. And I'll do this 5 times a week for the next 1 year, and that's fine with me. You know, if I save a handful of people, then I've done well. If I save more, that's even better, right? Or, you know, us having these conversations. But one other thing I wanted to make a point on those exchanges too, while I have it in mind, Lathisan pointed out, you know, it's easy to get sucked into, there's getting more APY for keeping staking your currencies on these centralized exchanges. You know, there's a point that I've been harping on over the last couple of weeks where there's one or the other, right? Let me see how to articulate this. I've said it so many times now, but everybody is very conscious or cognitive of not wanting to miss, quote unquote, that opportunity, right? So they're very quick to say, hey, I better get in on this thing while I have that opportunity. So it's versus where I generally have the mindset of I would rather miss 9 out of 10 opportunities instead of getting compromised 1 out of 100 times. Whether compromised is losing my currency to, you know, something like FTX or someone social engineering me, or me joining a rug project or something like that, right? So I would much rather miss the majority of opportunities versus getting compromised just that 1 time out of 100, right? I really wish everybody would have that mindset.
You nailed it. Like, I can even give a brief story there, less than a minute, specifically around that one thing, right? It was kind of like the FOMO, like, oh, well, I had been so much time investing, researching Cardano, different protocols that I thought were secure, that I could just understand from reading and going through their content. But when I had my MetaMask and I was trying to get support through Discord, because I also mine Helium. So it's like, whether it was trying to get my Bobcat 300 to work, I reached out and thought I was talking to a person I was already talking to, and it was a mirrored account. So again, if we're here to help people understand how these things happen, I want to share what I've learned, which is, they will take the alphabet in a different language and then mirror that and use that and to look like there's someone who you had talked to or someone that you're a friend. They might take the E out of the, you know, foreign alphabet that looks the exact same to the naked eye and mix that in with a US based code, and it doesn't read it. So it shows why when you try to search that person, you might find them. But then when you actually try to put in their full account, like, it will only show up as one user, even though there could be two or three out there, because if you're typing in the English alphabet in the search bar, you're going to miss that. So I fell for that. And what happened was, they had just needed my receive address. And once they had gotten my receive address through MetaMask, I think there was either a time where I had clicked on a link that was to go to a website that looked like a secure website, where they got a keystroke tracer on me. So all they had was just my receive address for my MetaMask. And then I had typed in my password, because I was signing a smart contract for a different thing in MetaMask. And they had seen that because I had logged in. Next thing you know, all seven of my assets just went to 0.000000 balance. And I'm still talking to these people on Discord, like wondering what's going on. Like, why did my MetaMask just disappear? Like, I was just trying to transfer, you know, Helium and these other assets around and look into my MetaMask. And I had realized that just then I wiped my whole computer, reset all the scripts, like completely shut them out, but not before I had lost like seven different assets, because I had decided, well, I'm going to jump in for these, you know, other NFT projects and I need MetaMask. And then I had my Voyager tokens, ironically, all stolen out of, which was my Ethos tokens back in the day. And I had all these other things that were just in MetaMask. So it was a little bit of a loss for me, but I have my stuff spread across multiple different wallets. I have multiple layers of security, different computers set up, passwords that are, you know, seed phrases that have never been keystroked into a computer. And I use steel plates to actually etch the codes in, so they're fireproof. And, you know, going through those ever little extra levels of security is why I didn't lose my whole, you know, nest egg there, because it was like, I did get a little greedy, but like you said, I'd rather have missed out on nine opportunities and just like to get that one that compromised all of my Ethereum-based assets. And guess what? The hackers were nice enough to leave my NFTs in there. So I have rug pull NFTs in OpenSea, but I don't have any assets that were in there anymore. And they'd be worth less than $100 now, but what they were worth is still, you know, it sucks to lose anything. And the fact that I felt compromised also reiterated that I need to be careful with my Cardano-based hot wallets. I need to be careful with my cold storage. I went out to the store and I got a Trezor cold wallet, the Model T. So it's like there's ways where I learned through kind of making some of those mistakes, trying to jump into something. And because I was really excited and was naive, because I was like, oh no, I've been through all this. I know what I'm doing. And even the ones who know what we're doing and think we're talking to someone that we trust and someone that we know on the other side, you still have to do your due diligence and be very careful out there.
Yeah, Ralph, I really appreciate you sharing that story. You know, and that brings up a few, you know, we'll discuss some of those specific things you mentioned in last post here, but, you know, I do appreciate you sharing that, and I hope somebody hears this and takes caution of that and learns from that situation you just shared. But yeah, you kind of shared the thing I mentioned when I first started the space about, you know, the mentality of layered security, not relying on just that one thing to protect you. I've been in security for a very long time, and there is not a single security application, tool, feature, etc. out there that is foolproof, right? They all have their challenges as well, right? So doing those things, like you said, having the hardware wallet, having those separate laptops, you know, all that stuff is a layered security mentality to continue building how safe you are. You know, that's great. But yeah, thanks again, Ralph. Yeah, so let's talk about, actually, you brought this up too, the hardware wallet. So he mentions hardware wallets, right? I won't get too in depth on what a hardware wallet is. I think we all know. But, you know, simply put, a hardware wallet is true self-custody. That is sitting on a device in your hands with your crypto on it that is not attached to anything. It's only attached when you're using it, right? So, you know, Ralph, if you have any comments, go ahead. But really, just simply put, you know, that the hardware, you know, I use a Trezor, but Ledger and Trezor are, of course, the most popular ones out there. And I recommend looking into them, watching some videos on them, and just deciding which one you like the best. The Trezor Model T is my favorite, but they both work great. But really, it's, you know, like I was saying earlier, keeping your, you know, it's first and foremost, don't leave your stuff on a centralized exchange. Secondly, you can keep a minimal amount or whatever you want into a software wallet like Eternal, MetaMask, Daedalus, Nami. But that is still software, right? In the Web2 world, it is still software, and they all still have the potential for vulnerabilities. It just will not avoid that. There are plenty of bad actors out there that spend their entire lives day in and day out finding vulnerabilities, right? So trying to social engineer you, trying to find vulnerabilities in the software walls as well. But to point out Ralph's story, you know, you could get social engineered and, or phished in your email, and they, there's a keylogger in your system, or they, gain there's all sorts of ways for them to gain access to your system by sending you a link on an email that I'm not going to dig into right yet. But then, maybe your wallet is fine, but something else is in your system has been compromised, and that then gives them access to your system. Therefore, then they can access, if you have, please, for the love of God, do not store a file on your computer with your username and passwords, things like that, right? Because then they can get that and then just log into your, the wallet, right? And yeah, so, keep things on your hardware wallets and only connect that hardware wallet when you're making a transaction. Then as soon as that transaction is over, disconnect the hardware wallet. That exponentially increases your safety and security.
Yeah, all really good points. And, I'm still trying to be the best educated around cold storage, but also understanding in our communities and ecosystems, there's a requirement to have some of this stuff in hot wallets so you can benefit off of the staking or custodial staking, where you can actually maintain your assets, but they still have to be in that wallet. So I'm looking forward to, as we continue to grow and develop, I'm sure there's going to be additional exchanges out there. There's going to be platforms that are going to hold assets and NFTs on different chains. That's something that I'm really interested to see where we go and still have a lot to learn about. So I wasn't sure if you're familiar with, if say I want to use a Trezor or Ledger, yeah, that's all good and all, but I've invested heavily in NFTs and I'm just trying to figure out what I can do to, I can't put the NFTs in cold storage and still benefit from the staking or passive income that they generate without having some type of vulnerability to a browser-based extension. And so that's where, if you had any insight on where you might see the industry going there, that's something that I'm still, I try to always respect the system and the processes in place and say, I know that I'm taking a risk by sinking my Nami or Eternal or Yoroi back in the day, right? If I'm sinking any of these wallets to practically like a marketplace or exchange, like I was always like, what happens if, that exchange can see my wallet? What happens if someone gets my password again and then sends a malicious token? Like I've always been wishing there was a way to store my NFTs in cold storage and simultaneously benefit from being able to stake them and sync them to these websites. But then it's like you have to plug in your external thing, and they all the Discord say do not plug in, do not use cold storage for staking or this, that, and the third. So I'm still like, I know we're very new in that, and the NFT stuff is a whole nother category of securing your assets. It's just another version of a different token, but it's just that trying to be secure where I've split up my assets across all the different wallets, but then I have to maintain or do drip drops for different perks across multiple different wallets multiple times every 5 days. But it, to me, that's that little extra level of security that if one thing does get compromise, it's not all gone. So any thoughts on NFTs and cold storage wallets, or how we can actually continue to be a part of these ecosystems which require syncing but also secure assets at the same time?
Yeah, I mean, that is a great question with not a great answer yet, right? I mean, to your point, I think Lothisen made this point, and you just alluded to it as well, where having your assets split up in different wallets and having these different layered things you have to go through is a hassle. But, that hassle is well worth it, right? I want to be very clear, it's extremely well worth it. Now, and to ease people's minds, when you first start doing these things, it will be a hassle, right? Because you're still fresh to doing that. But once you do it enough, it'll become, just second nature, and it'll become just a routine thing for you to do. So that hassle, that feeling of hassleness will just kind of be a subconscious thing at that point and kind of go away. It'll just be what you do. Now to that point about you know, the NFT thing, the problem is, you know, like you said, it's still really new. You know, as long as the hardware wallets have been out, it's still really new. And like what you see is you start seeing the dApp creators or wallet creators. They're more routinely now integrating the ability to connect hardware wallets. But you know, the NFT projects are people with, maybe they don't have the skill sets, or maybe, you know, the thing is a lot of these NFT projects just aren't implementing that ability to connect hardware wallets. And I'm not a developer. I do some coding, right? I write Python and some other things, and I mess around with Plutus, but I'm not a developer enough to be able to tell you what they would need to do to integrate it. I just know that, you know, as these NFT you know, you start seeing, like I said, right? You start seeing these wallets, adapts, et cetera, start they're in the last couple of years, they're really starting to integrate hardware wallets functionality. Now it'll start perpetuating down to NFT projects, is my presumption, right? The more that they get sophisticated, the more that the developer ecosystem grows, and so forth, you'll start seeing, I imagine you'll start seeing these projects integrating it, right? It's that's the downfall, the fact that we're still so new, and there's not enough out there, right? And you know, for all of these little things out there to just natively integrate hardware wallets immediately right away. Maybe there's been an NFT project that's done it. I'm not actually very sure about that. I was super heavy into NFTs at first, but you know, the beginning of this year I just kind of stopped doing that, in lieu of just being so busy. So I'm not sure if anybody's actually done that or not, but if they have, it's not been very many, right? So I don't know. That's a trick, but that goes that brings that that's where, like, I always want to tell people to be as secure as possible and practice as much security as possible, because that's the easiest thing to do. I don't want to lead anybody astray, but at the same time, there's a mentality in security called, you know, it's security versus availability, right? Determining what your risk level is and what you're okay with. How secure do you want to be versus how much availability do you want to have? Simply meaning, right? The security part is straightforward, right? How locked down do you want to make things? But what comes with that, though, the more you lock things down, the less available they are, the more things you have to do to make to use those things, right? But obviously I always lean towards the security side, and I think most people should. But again, that's an individual choice, you know. That's, you know, what you're doing sounds like a decent, you know, I think a good thing to consider as well. You know, just having different wallets with different levels of things in each one. I do that as well. Like my high profile NFTs that I stake or do something with, they're in a wallet all by themselves with like no ADA in them, right? I just keep them there to do that thing. And again, just to be repetitive to your point, that does at first that's kind of a hassle, but I mean, now I'm in such a fluid emotion with all of it. You know, I have certain wallets on one laptop, certain ones on another, certain ones with specific use cases, and it's just routine for me now, right? I got
Yeah.
long-winded with that, but yeah.
No, that all makes sense, and that's exactly why. Like, I have that Rareblume wallet just like sitting there by itself, and every event that I have or activity that I do, or thing, I have a separate wallet. You're right; it is definitely a challenge. But my also
Right.
thing that I'm working with the Virginia Blockchain Council here in our local state to try to push for regulation, and the only thing that we've gotten so far is the ability to have state-accredited banks hold the seed phrases to your wallets. So they're not actually holding the assets themselves, and or at least the regulation is allowing them to. Now, here's the thing. I have gone to a lot of these banks and said, "Can I deposit my seed phrase here?" And have gotten like wide open eyed stares, like, what did he just say to me? I don't even understand what a seed phrase is. So there's a lot of education that still needs to happen in the space, and whether it's state accredited banks or I'm looking for like a beneficiary, right? Like, what happens if I go out and get hit by a bus? And then I've got to make sure that everyone around me or have a will or a way to lead a path of breadcrumbs to all these 50 to plus different wallets for different assets. It's like, it's only as good as, like, you know, people say, oh, well, that's what happens when the internet goes down and crypto is, you know, you can't access it. I'm like, if the internet goes down, you won't be able to access anything from the bank either. There's like, there's so many things that, like, all right, well, if you think about this realistically, if there's an issue where you need to get up and run, I can take my treasure, I can take my steel cards, and I can go, and I can recover that anywhere in the world and be okay. I can't do that with my money in the local bank. There's a lot of, like, fees or challenges, or who knows what would happen if there's a bank run when they try to say, oh, well, we don't actually have, none of the banks actually carry all of the cash that if everyone was to go deposit all their cash, right? Because they've lent it out. They've done mortgages and loans, right? All following the rules, nothing wrong there. But it's like, oh, if these things happen, people are worried about crypto and how they're going to have security. I want to look into better beneficiary services on a global scale. Whether that's through smart contracts, whether that's a way that you can say, hey, I think we learned a little bit about this with maybe Lace or some of the stuff that was coming out, that if you don't access this site within, or access this wallet within X amount of days, 180 days or 365 days, right? Set it annually. If this isn't activated, then it'll send a note, or, you know, you can leave a trace or a way to actually recover that or have that sent to someone, right? So in case something does happen, or people get old age and they forget where things go, and it's, something is just not accessed in enough time, that you can tie a recovery or some type of process in place to be able to access those funds. Because that's really, like, you know, if something were to happen, like, I've talked to my family, I've talked to people I trust, but what about the people that don't necessarily have that next person or next of kin, or someone to tell that they have these assets, no matter what it is, right? Whether it's a tokenized stock or tokenized coin or overall asset, it's like, how do you secure that? But then how do you do it when we get into, don't want to get too conceptual here, but I'll plant this seed, when we get into quantum computing and quantum resistance that needs to be had for securing data and assets, because 14 million trash hashes a second is going to be able to break any standard password or, you know, short-term standard encryption. So looking at that quantum computing, and I love how, at least with Cardano in my initial research, hearing Charles talk about, you know, Cardano already having mechanisms to be quantum resistant in the future was another attraction from the cybersecurity aspect of my money, my assets. You know, it's why I've gone so all into Cardano, because I feel that there is that level of security, measure twice, cut once. And yeah, it's a lot of good things that they're already doing on the forefront of cybersecurity.
Yeah, indeed. You know, that's a great, you know, the thing is, like, you know, and we'll move on after I make this point, but yeah, and to your point about quantum physics and quantum computing, right? Like, there are, for years now, there are already bad actors out there actively, you know, quantum computing is going to be a great thing, but it's also going to be a tool for the bad actors as well, right? So not only will it be something they're trying to break, if you will, but they're also going to look in, they're also looking into ways in how to leverage it for their own benefit as well, right? So, yeah, quantum, we'll still have these problems, right? It's just going to be on a much newer, different scale. But yeah, it's great that people like Charles and other people, you know, have the foresight enough to be planning for that already, right? Yeah, but okay, so let's talk about some of the a few security tips that he mentioned that everybody can do to help themselves. So you talked about seed phrases, right? And that was his next point. Storing your seed phrases securely. So real quick, a seed phrase is now there's a difference between a seed phrase and a password when it comes to a wallet, where the seed phrase is the thing that even gives you access to the wallet to begin with. It's, you know, for Cardano wallets, it's 24 characters. I think it used to be, or 24 words. I think it was 12 when Byron was out, if I remember right, something like that. But it's essentially so it's 24 words, randomly generated words, that you use to even gain access to your wallet to restore it to whatever device you're on, right? And you know, so that's what that's for. That's the most important thing. The password, you know, sometimes people get confused where the password is, you're creating a password to just sign a transaction to, you know, so if you've restored your wallet or created your wallet, you have the seed phrase. Now you go to send Bob some ADA. Well, in order to send Bob that ADA or NFT, you have to then put in your password to sign the transaction, right? So that's the difference there. But now in terms of protecting your seed phrase, right? Again, I'm sure I know that many, many people do this, but I just don't do it. Do not store your seed phrases on a device that has internet access, right? Write them down. Or get a physical device that you can store your seed phrases on. There are all kinds out there. I think, I don't know if they're still doing it, but I know, like, if you buy a hardware wallet like Trezor or Ledger, I think they offer. I think the last time I looked, they were actually out of stock, maybe, but they usually offer where you can also buy a physical metallic device that you can punch in your seed phrase into. Then you can store that in a safe or whatever home security thing you have. And don't leave that on your damn computer, because if something happens to that system, then they have that. Like, I cannot stress enough to not do that. But anyway, so have the physical seed phrase device. And there are plenty out there that are fireproof, all sorts of different Mother Nature proofs. That way, you know, nothing, it just can't be destroyed, right? Lathesan mentions one there's one out there called CK Wallet. I think CK Wallet is probably the most popular one. But yeah, CK Wallet, or if you do buy the Ledger or Trezor, I do think they offer that. I'm not sure. But you know, Anthony at Bloompool, him and his wife do a thing called, Crypt Keeper Wallet. So that's just, I actually have one. It's just a metal, it looks like a metal card. It comes with the tool there. I just punch in my seed phrase on it, then I store it in my safe. And it's good to go. So again, you know, there are plenty of options out there, but the ones I mentioned were Crypt Keeper, CK Wallet, and then if you buy a hardware wallet, see if they are offering the physical seed phrase device. Yeah, I'll pause there. I'll move on, but if you have anything to share on that, Ralph, go ahead.
Yeah, just one quick thing, and I learned this through Twitter Space a little while back, was for anyone listening to be careful about where you buy your Ledger or Trezor. Don't think that you're necessarily always getting a good deal if you go buy one through Amazon or one of these redistributed sites. One of the things they mentioned is that people can get in there and get your phrase for that device and then repackage it and reship it out to you. And then once you load your device, they'll just recover that wallet once you put your items on there and then steal your assets. So the thing is, be careful where you are getting some of these hardware wallets and just know that it's a trusted source. I think the recommendation was to just buy directly from their sites or a trusted distributor. You know, that's one thing they mentioned at the conferences. Just be weary. If something's too good to be true, and something is too good of a sale that just is like, wow, 75% off or 50% off, when you're not seeing that anywhere else on any other sites to compare it to, just be weary of some of those things. So just wanted to add that point.
1,000%. So there's something that I harp on to an annoying state, right, is go to the source. Right. If you're buying a hardware wallet, go to the source. If your best friend sends you a link to something, go to the source. Don't use that. If they say, hey, here's a new dApp, go check it out. Don't click that. Even though you trust your best friend, you don't know if that person wasn't socially engineered and has some malicious link they're not even aware of. Right. I 100% of the time, never, ever, ever go to something given to me. You know, if someone says, you know, if I'm watching a YouTuber and they say, hey, here's a site, you know, where you can put in a code and get a discounted ledger. I just don't want the discount, right? No way in hell I'm doing that. Every time I'm told about something, I go find the source and I access it that way. To Ralph's point, and I recommend everybody have that approach. And that will save you. Believe me, it'll definitely help to saving you. All right, moving to the next security thing you can do. This is something often not a lot of people are familiar with. I live in a very small town where the people we know are all farmers and stuff like that. And the place where we get all our seed from and stuff like that, he is just a country boy, and that's what he is. And I was talking one day about a password manager, and so I was giving him some tips on that. So what a password manager is, first of all, is it's a thing to where I'll put it very simply. You basically have one password for that thing, and all of your other passwords are stored encrypted into that password manager software. Now, again, not everything is foolproof. There have been password managers out there that have been supposedly compromised to some degree, generally speaking, that's a very good tool to help you, because the thing is, you know, you probably have, I mean, I probably have 70 or 80 or more passwords for things. I mean, for my day job at cybersecurity, to all my crypto stuff, to just regular things, I have 6 different email accounts, you know? So I have passwords out the wazoo. And the problem is, it's hard to remember if you create a different complicated password for everything. It's virtually impossible to remember those passwords. So what do people do? They use the exact same password for everything, or they take the password and they just modify like one character in it or something, and they do that every time. The problem is, if someone finds that password, then it's easy for them to find the rest of your just guess the rest of your passwords, right? So you can use something like LastPass. I think Lathesan mentioned LastPass, and that is a great one. I use that. But there's also one out there called KeePass. I think there might have been an article in KeePass about some vulnerability thing they had one time. I think, if I remember right, don't quote me, they came back and said, we don't store any of the information on their stuff, and then everything's encrypted on the application and so forth. But anyway, LastPass, KeePass, there's one out there called Bitwarden. I think Bitwarden is a free option. Then you got something like 1Password or Dashlane. Those I'm not familiar with. I am familiar with KeePass and LastPass, and a little bit familiar with Bitwarden. But anyway, basically, it's just, again, just repeat, it's a very simply put, it's a piece of software where you can make the most complicated passwords in the world for every one of your things, or every one of the applications that you use or systems you use, and store that in the password manager. Then you have some very complicated password for the password manager, and then that's all you have to remember at that point. I highly recommend it. I wish everybody would start using that. It'll just make your life a lot, not only will it make it more secure, but it'll make it a lot easier. And a password manager really gets rid of the whole security versus availability thing, right? Because everything is still very available to you, but then also very secure. So I'd recommend definitely looking into that. I skipped over one thing that I am very confident in that not many people know about at all. It's called SIM swapping. Right. So every mobile device has a SIM card in it. Right. And that's where all of your information is. Right. So especially like your phone number. Right. Your phone number is attached to the SIM card. So what people, you know, what these bad actors can do is, you know, they can try to socially, for one thing, they'll try to do is socially engineer the service provider, right, Verizon or AT&T or something like that, into activating a SIM card. So if they do that, what will happen is then they have that SIM card, they put it in their device, and then at that point, everything is being sent to that device and not yours anymore. making you, it would be very hard for you to even be aware of it in time to save yourself. So there's the ability to enable SIM lock on your mobile device. Now, I use Android. I do not use Apple products because of my fundamental beliefs against them. But so I'm sure Apple has it. But in Android, you could just go to settings and then go to security, and there'll be an option in there to enable SIM lock. So at that point, it'll prevent anybody from just easily social engineering your service provider into enabling another SIM. And that used to not. You know, that was, yeah, I remember years ago, that wasn't a very common thing, but now it is becoming very common for that to occur. So I'd recommend whatever mobile device you have, whatever operating system you have on your mobile device, go looking that up and looking in how to enabling SIM lock. Now, I recommend that because, so there's another thing that he mentions around two-factor authentication, which I'm sure at this point, a lot of people in crypto are actually aware of that, right? So you have your application, you have a password, but then you enable two-factor authentication. Maybe that will be biometrics where you have to put in your thumbprint, or a lot of applications now use software to two-factor authentication. Like, for instance, a lot of things I have are connected to maybe Google Authenticator or something like that, right? And then what will happen is you'll have to connect that Google Authenticator, put in the right information, and then you log in with your password to some application, and then it'll ask you to go to whatever authenticator you're using to get that one-time passcode OTP from your authenticator. Then you'll have to put that in, right? Now, that is actually a pretty secure thing, but to Lathesan's point, if you don't have SIM lock enabled and they get a SIM activated with your number, then what they can do at that point is, you know, start requesting from these different services to try to log in, and then get your, then they can start requesting these OTPs, these one-time passwords, which will then give them the two-factor authentication to get into whatever said application that you have. So two-factor authentication along with SIM lock is what is strongly suggested, and the SIM lock would make the 2FA thing a lot safer for you to use. But yeah, definitely SIM lock and definitely two-factor authentication. Now, it's not foolproof, right? I heard not long ago someone had an issue with Discord where I think you can get, I probably should have dug into this before I started speaking on it because I'm not actually entirely sure. But there's a key of some sort that someone can obtain related to your Discord account and compromise your Discord account. So there are situations where these two things are not always 100% foolproof, but again, that goes back to the whole layered security thing. So just keep in mind those things. Go to Lathesan's post. He pinned it and you can read that more. I'll also put it on my website so everybody can reference it there. Yeah. So those are the major things that he mentioned. Then for hardware two-factor authentication, he mentioned Yubico. I have not personally used Yubico, but go check that out and see what that's all about. And then for software, you know, I mentioned Google Authenticator, but then you also have Authy out there as well, Authy. So that's another option as well. But look into that, find out what works for you, and get that stuff enabled and start using it. Yeah, I just went through all those things really quick. Ralph, did it generate any thoughts for you to share on those things?
I learned a couple things, and I have already Googled and looking how to lock my SIM card on my Android. And so kudos on the Android only, because I feel like I'm still on an island sometimes being the only Android user.
Hey, well, I'm, you know, first of all, I very much appreciate you joining the space with me and helping along with this conversation. It was really great. And also, that's awesome. You pulled something out of it. That's great. Yeah. No, I am an avid anything but Apple user. So I love Android. I love Windows. I love Linux. I'm not sure if Apple is owned by North Korea or not, so that's why I avoid Apple.
Yeah, but you know how we talked about even some of the like applications or wallets or ways that we want to look at security. I feel like it never all happens all at the same time, because if you look at Apple and Android, you look at apps that come out, the same apps will come out at different dates and periods and times, because it's not developed in parallel all the time and released at the same time, not gone through all the audit and testing and penetration testing for every application. So, you know, it's when we look at Apple versus, you know, I have my personal phone that I have work phone. Well, my work phone, they make me get an Apple so I don't show up as a different color on the chats and be the person who, you know, makes everyone messes up every group chat. But I will say that even for a lot of like the other work that I do on the side of flying drones, they have, you know, their applications are designed first and foremost to work with Apple products. So at some point, like, you know, I'm fortunate to be able to have both a personal phone and a work phone separately. But, you know, if I had my choice, I would only go with the Samsung or Android device. But it's because I felt like I could truly control the system. And I know that there's a lot of the security aspects with Apple. So not trying to hate on any Apple, you know, users here, because I know that they have a decent firewall, but they don't give you options, and they don't give you that extra level of, oh, if you are compromised, do you actually know how you're compromised, and do you know how to actually look into the system to see if you're compromised? That's a very tough situation from looking back to, you know, Android system, where I can understand it better and get more customization out of my product and make it more like uniquely tied to me. And that's how I've always felt. It wasn't just the I could get the headphone jack longer than everyone else, or I could get expandable memory because I could put in a 400 gigabyte micro SD card in my phone. So I don't have to worry about paying for all this extra cloud storage and being a tool in the system of subscriptions, right? One less subscription I have to worry about from Apple Cloud, whereas I can just use expandable memory and know that my device is locked and not having to be continuously synced to those cloud-based servers, just reducing that exposure risk.
Yeah, there's so many thoughts there out of what you just said. Yeah, the whole cloud-based thing, you know, if anybody's using cloud-based anything, it's okay, but keep in mind, you are relying on somebody else, right? This is not some magic cloud. There is somebody else with devices instead of you having devices. Then you have to trust that they'll keep secure, right? But yeah, and then Apple, right? I do have a Mac Mini that I keep powered off, only turn on when I need to test something that was given to me out of the necessity of knowing Apple for my job. But yeah, I just have a fundamental disagreement with their proprietariness, and I don't like that. But that's my own personal belief, you know. But the other thing is also, I'm spitting all these thoughts off really quickly, but I don't want to forget them. But the security of Apple. Now, everybody, you know, back in the day, a few years ago, would say Apple is very, very secure compared to Windows or anything else, right? That's kind of a you're misleading people. The people would mislead other people when they would say that. The situation was, it wasn't enough opportunity for bad actors at that time, because there weren't that many people using Apple devices. So, you know, the return of investment for bad actors just wasn't there, right? But now you could go to these websites, CVE. So you can look up something called the CVEs out there, right? These CVEs are posted out there publicly of vulnerabilities. I look at them and I see Apple vulnerability CVEs all the time. There was something called a zero day on Apple not that long ago, I think last month or something, that they had to patch immediately for all their iPhones. So, you know, there's a misconception that Apple is more secure. In fact, they're not. It's just the opportunity is just starting to grow for the opportunity. The return of investment is just starting to grow for bad actors. Right.
Great point.
That's my rant.
No, it's a great point, just because, you know, I felt just the way I was explaining it there sounds like I'm kind of naive or wasn't quite taking
into
consideration. No, but I it's a good check to always have those balances of making sure that is what I believe exactly what's going on. Am I testing my, you know, I don't want to get complacent with thinking the things that I thought simply because, yeah, I was one of those people who was like, yeah, you could pay this extra for Apple and you get this security. But you're right, like there wasn't many people using it. So now the fact that they can get that ROI and a lot more people are using it more people are going to see opportunity out there. And like you said, there's always good actors, but there's always going to be some bad actors out there as well. So that's, I remember when they were like, you need to update your iOS software like ASAP. Like, I remember that now. And I remember seeing the alerts and telling everyone and my family and friends, like, hey, you need to go update this, because all my networks and everyone was telling me that you could be compromised through a back door if you didn't go and make this update. So yeah, thanks for recapping that and just re-hitting that point home of, you know, don't think that there's any specific IT solution or service out there that is bulletproof, because it's just hasn't gotten to the point where there might not be enough bad actors in the space to be justified to spend their time where they're getting easier returns on other platforms or protocols or IP. You know, you have it.
Yeah, right. Indeed. Absolutely, Ralph. Absolutely. Yeah. All right. So we're at an hour now. So just for you, Ralph, and then anybody listening to the recording, if you do listen to the recording in the next 5 hours, I'll host another space at 6 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. UTC this evening. I think there has been a few people already wanting to do that one. Somehow that's a better time for people. So I'll be doing that one, and we'll go through the same conversation again. I'll probably bring up different things too. I'll post this on my epochsec.io website so people can reference it. And then also just to reiterate, if someone did listen to the last few minutes of this for some reason, you can always schedule an individual session with me. You go to my website I just mentioned, go to the contact page, and my Calendly link is on there. You just click a date, pick a time, and it'll automatically send you and me an email along with a Google Meet link. And then we'll meet up and talk about whatever you want. If you're an individual or if you're a team that doesn't have a cybersecurity person, you want some tips or whatever. Well, you know, however you guys want, or if you're someone looking to get into cybersecurity and need some mentoring or some advice on what to do, where to go, how to do it, and so forth, I'm glad to help people out like that too. But Ralph, again, man, I really appreciate your time joining this. I do know people listen to this. I get people telling me all the time they listen to these recordings. So even though it was just you and I, people will get value out of this. So thanks again.
And thank you for doing what you do. You know, we need to get that education out there. And I'm a big advocate of continuously trying to make sure that everyone understands best practices and how to keep their assets safe, right? And as part of the Cardano community, it's like we always want to make sure that we're looking out for each other. And all that we ask is that everyone pays it forward and shares these messages with their networks. And, you know, even if we can help that one person can help one other person, it'll be contagious on the amount of power that we can bring of awareness and education to securing these assets, which will make the overall space more enjoyable for all. So thanks again for your time and appreciate you doing this.
Yeah, thanks, Ralph. Very, very well put there. You put it very much better than I could have. But yeah, hey, man, for your reference, I think I told you, but I'll be doing these every week. I'll have different topics every week. I'll be writing articles and stuff like that. So this would be an ongoing thing. I won't talk about the same thing all the time. I'll probably rebrain these topics up periodically just to kind of just try to ingrain them in people's minds. But yeah. Anyway, Ralph, you have a great day, and we'll talk soon.